Hello and welcome to Bringing Education Home. I'm Herb.
And I'm Christina. And together we bring you ideas for family development that help raise happy, healthy, and successful children that are both inside
and outside the box. If you like the show, be sure to follow Christina on Facebook.
And please leave a like, review, and comment on your favorite podcast platform.
Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Mandy Dickey. Mandy is a board-certified nurse practitioner with 20 plus years of experience in healthcare, nearly all being related to neurosciences. As well as being a two-time Top Nurse Practitioner Award winner, she received the Faculty Excellence Award in her previous role of nursing professor, has been on the review committee for several nursing textbooks, and holds the most prestigious award of all, of Best Mom Ever from her children. Mandy started Brain Wellness Solutions in 2022, which is a virtual neurology health education company where she began her own podcast and authored a book on migraine treatment, Brain Wellness. Mm-hmm. The podcast has featured both healthcare professionals and patients experiencing various illnesses related to brain health. In 2023, Mandy was in a car accident and suffered a traumatic brain injury herself, and while not fully recovered, has returned to her passion of sharing and educating the public about neuroscience topics, now most passionately about concussions and traumatic brain injuries. Welcome back, Mandy. It is a pleasure to have you. We were on her podcast earlier this week, and so this is just like picking up the conversation from where it left off. So welcome, Mandy. Thank you for being on our show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's awesome having this podcast swap here.
It is, exactly, because we're reaching both sets of audiences and we're able to hopefully help each set of audience, right? And what I think is really amazing about this is that because you're coming in and you're going to maybe help us talk to families a little bit about what is this thing called brain concussion, brain trauma? When do we need to really get worried about our kids? When do we need to kind of like take that breath and step back and like, oh, they bounce, they're okay. Or that's the way it used to be, right? All those things, yeah. But as we get started, our first question is usually, what drove you to this passion? We know that you had your own injury. We know you've been in it for a long time. But was there a key turning point that made you go down that path of education and nursing in the first place?
Yeah. So funny thing, when I was a little girl, I wanted to be either a teacher or a nurse. And as an adult, I've been able to be both. And that's been really exciting. When I started in healthcare, it was on a regular medical surgical floor. And then shortly into that, I got into the neurology floor and I absolutely fell in love. I love that no two brains are the same. You can have two people with injuries to their brain that are exactly the same next to each other, and they're going to respond differently. And I spent the first many years of my experience doing stroke care. So I took care of patients that had strokes right off the bat from the emergency room all the way through until they went off to rehab. And it was very rewarding. I got into that because of my grandmother having strokes, and one of our family good friends from our church growing up had a heart attack and stroke related to smoking. So I've been big on not smoking too because of that. But watching those people in my life, they were very instrumental in pushing me toward the neurological side of things. And I just absolutely fell in love with it, resonated with it. And the irony of me having a brain injury after being in neuroscience as long as I have was not lost on me in this whole process. But I'm hoping that having this experience will just build even better practitioner in me when I get back to it.
So on your podcast, your brain injury is relatively recent. You were in neurosciences for quite a while before you had it. And one of the interesting things that came up when we were on your podcast was that when you had your brain injury, you weren't able to recognize it in yourself right away. So with children who are still developing, what are some ways that, because it's like, kids aren't settled yet. How can we recognize when a child starts to have issues or starts changing because of something they might have hit their head?
Yeah. So most of the injuries that happen in children are sports related. They can happen otherwise than that. So I live in Minnesota. We have lots of snow and ice. People fall. They hit their heads. They get in car accidents like I did. So injuries can happen multiple different ways, but in kids, it's usually a sports related thing. So when we talk about what happens with those sports kids, it's sometimes they can tell us what's going on. Sometimes they can't. The things that they might tell us are that they just feel off. They don't feel right. They kind of feel tired. They feel sluggish. they might feel a little slow. They can't quite follow what's happening in school if they're a school-aged kid. They might complain of a headache, but they might just kind of complain of some pressure in their head. And this can happen whether they lost consciousness or not. So you don't have to lose consciousness to have a concussion. And people used to always think that you only had to hit your head in order to get a concussion. But we actually find a lot of cheerleaders get concussions, not because they hit their head, but because they were caught strangely and their brain bounced around inside the skull, and they ended up with a brain injury that way. So you don't actually have to hit your head to have a concussion either. Regardless of how it happens, the symptoms afterwards are going to look similar. So as far as parents go, parents need to watch their children and see, are they more sleepy than they used to be? Are they having trouble with their appetite? Maybe they don't want to eat as much as they normally did. They might, if they're in sports, they might forget those plays that they've done forever, and they just can't quite follow what's happening on the field or on the court, whatever sport they're playing. They might answer questions more slowly than they used to. Kids usually talk really fast, and when they get excited, they can't really kind of slow themselves down. But with a brain injury, they tend to answer slower, and it's kind of a little bit more deliberate, and they have to think about those answers. So those are some of the things that the parents might see. Sometimes it's just a change in personality. So I know I've experienced that as an adult, but as the people around me noticed that more than some of the other things too, is that I was a little bit shorter fuse, a little bit easier to get angered, and just not that same kind of happy-go-lucky person that the kids normally can be. So some of those things are what we need to watch for. And then some of these other things I said previously are some things that they might report to us, just not knowing how to explain it perfectly.
That is really, really helpful, because I mean, when we were growing up, oh, kids bounce, they're fine. Just get up and brush it off and keep going again. And I know that luckily a lot of the sports teams and stuff have brought that back a little bit. It's like, no, we're not going to just brush it off anymore. We're going to have them sit down. We're going to have them relax a little bit, make sure they're really kind of clicking back in there. But then what you said about the cheerleaders, I hadn't even thought about that one either, right? And other, gymnastics is probably the same way, if they land wrong or they get caught wrong, kind of thing. So that's really interesting as well, because as we were talking with you on your podcast, you didn't exactly know when, or you knew didn't know exactly know you had one, and somebody kind of clue you in. Herb was the same way. We didn't really understand the impact until later. So bringing that focus onto the kids and knowing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. When I did get my brain scan, it came back as a series of concussive related incidences. Mm-hmm. So I moved out of Cal, or I should say my parents moved out of California when I was 8 years old. And so I can remember at least four major times where I like banged my head hard. So I fell out of a tree, like way high up, and landed basically boom on my face. I got hit in the head with a bat playing baseball in a driveway, had this big old huge knot on my head. I was running through a playground and I caught a girl on the backswing and she sent me flying, and I hit my head on the curb that surrounded the playground. They had to take me to the hospital for that, close up my head. And I fell off of like these really big old huge metal ladders that they used to have in the 70s. And I remember like banging on the way down. So that's four that I'm aware of, but I know that there were a lot more because I was always
playing hard
that way. So it's like, so that was before I was eight, before my personality developed. And then when I did get to where I was going, I played all the sports. And so, even before I got out of high school, I could probably name six or seven more, and a couple of them where I actually lost consciousness. So, and again, this was in the 70s and 80s, where kids bounce and you just don't talk about it. And you just keep going. So with that many, how can you tell how if someone is just that way, how do you start protecting them? How do you help fix
bubble wrap
what they're doing?
I was just going to say bubble wrap might be good at that point. You know, that's an interesting concept with that too, because I was a 70s, 80s baby as well. And we just kept going. We got up, we brushed ourselves off. I too had a baseball bat to the head. My sisters and I played softball in the backyard, and I stood a little bit too close to our fake home plate. And I woke up with all of them looking down at us saying, "Mom's gonna be so mad."
Right. Well, there was, if you weren't bleeding and there weren't bones showing, then mom probably wouldn't have even found out about it.
Yeah, probably not. They may or may not have told. I don't remember that part, but we always say that kids bounce back and they're resilient. And to some extent, yes, that's true. But at the same token, when people have multiple head injuries, it takes longer to recover. And there's actually a thing called second impact syndrome. So if we put kids back into sports too quickly, they can have concussion on top of concussion, and they can actually end up with permanent brain damage. It can be so severe that there have been people who have passed away because of it. So it's a real thing, and it's a very serious thing. A lot of the schools now are following the CDC guidelines. There's a program called Heads Up Concussion, and they do a lot of educating for healthcare providers, for parents, for students, for coaches, and they will lay out exactly what to do if somebody has a concussion during one of their sports. And I will say a lot of this came from the professional sports round. So when they were seeing repeat concussions happening in professional sports, that trickled down into our athletes in school. So they started watching to see when can they actually safely return without having that potential for that second impact syndrome. So this is something you can find on the CDC website too, that Heads Up Concussion program. But there is a 6-step program that they use to figure out how to get people back into sports so that they don't have that second impact thing. The first one is having a few days of rest. Back when we were younger, when they identified a really bad concussion, they usually told us to stay in bed, don't do anything for a long period of time. And it would be weeks. And the longer you do that, the longer it actually takes to recover. So you do need to return to activities, but cautiously. So now we're saying a couple days of rest. So 2 to 3 days of rest. And then you slowly start to bring in activities. First, you do your normal daily activities. So basic things, maybe some light walks, but really, really light activity, if anything. And as long as you tolerate that okay, then you can move on to the next step of bringing in some light aerobic activity. And this is going to be, again, walking, maybe some really light biking, but it's going to be a whole lot shorter, long lit or shorter lasting episode than you normally would have done for activity. And then it's moderate activity. So you increase the intensity. You might bring in some jogging, maybe some light weight lifting, still less than your normal. Again, at any point in this, if you have your symptoms, they will stop and maybe even back you up to the next stage because they don't want to have those repeat symptoms. They're not doing that as well for adults, right? But after that, then they bring in heavy non-contact activities and then gradually bring in the practice and then back into actual competition. So all of that is to help prevent these kids from having multiple concussion and potential permanent damage on their brains. We didn't have that luxury when we were growing up, so we had all the concussions, and now we're seeing the long-term effects of it. Women, girls tend to have longer lasting symptoms than boys do, and there's a lot of research to show that. I actually did an episode on this several weeks ago, that the differences between males and females in sports, and those female athletes, regardless of age, tend to have symptoms last longer than their male counterparts, even in the same sports, same protective equipment. And then when people have repeat concussions, like I said, it takes longer to recover. And you might not have as many of those like really telling signs of concussion, but it might be the more vague things like your memory just isn't great, or your concentration isn't quite there. And when we're in our 40s and up, then they start saying, well, it could be just age related changes. You really need to look at the timing of it. It's not always just coincidence that age related happens right after you have an accident.
And that's something hopefully doctors are getting the message of, right? Like,
Yeah, so we use a lot of terms to try to talk about severity too, but even somebody with what's quoted a mild traumatic brain injury, a little bit more severe concussion, I guess, if they have any kind of symptoms lasting, that's when we would call it that mild to traumatic brain injury instead of just a plain concussion. Even with that, people can have long-term consequences, especially if they have a history of previous concussions.
Okay, and just in case we have people from Canada watching, Canada people call it ABI instead of TBI, so it's acquired brain injury instead of traumatic brain injury. So So any Canadians out there, that's what we're talking about. Now, you know, so it sounds really weird, but like the most dangerous sport in America for children is baseball. And the second is actually they're figuring out to be soccer, because even though it's a softball, bumping that ball with your head, you know, it might not hurt your head, but it's banging that because the brain is actually like the consistency of butter, and you do have some spiny ridges inside of your brain that can actually do that. So like hitting the head with your ball, hitting the ball with your head can actually do quite a bit of damage. So, you know, if your kids are in baseball or soccer, that's actually more, you need to watch out more than football
or lacrosse.
So, you know, if your kids are in sports, you know, really start paying attention to what's happening with them and how they are behaving. Because, and another really interesting thing is on the Myers-Briggs type index, which is a personality index, I'm what's called an INFJ. And it's the rarest of the personality types, and INFJs actually do more research on brain types than pretty much any other brain type of people. And so some of the studies are INFJs made, or are they natural? And so there are some studies out there that traumatic injuries is what creates an INFJ. And when you said that women are more susceptible and to the repetitive thing in the INFJ world, women INFJs outnumber men INFJs 3-1. So of the INFJs, only 25% are male. So I don't know whether that's at all related, but anecdotally, and just, you know, the way my brain works after all of this and all of the stuff that I've looked at, those kind of statistics things just kind of like, what? And so, yeah, you just gave me a really big what there. So I'm one. So all of these little puzzle pieces make a really pretty picture.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
me.
Yeah. And I started doing some of that research just because of my own injury, because I was curious. I'm like, okay, everybody keeps saying these things about me, but that doesn't seem to fit me. And it makes sense now, because most of the research, even though we know that women tend to have more severe symptoms and last longer, most of the research has been done on males. So it doesn't really show what happens to females truly. There's more with the athletic world than there is the general public. Yeah. But I mean, you can kind of infer some of that to the general population as well. But yeah, there's a lot yet to be researched.
Yeah. Okay. Now I have to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, because I'm like, I had boys. They just jumped up and just kept going and things like that. Are we telling parents that every time your child bumps its head, you have to like freak out? It's like, whoa, stop, lay down for a couple of days, et cetera, right? We're not saying that, but
no,
we're saying
no.
Pay attention.
Yep. I'm a boy mom as well. I've had three of them. I have a bonus daughter now, but I've always had the boys, and they're rambunctious. They climb. I did a lot of that too, but they do it even more. It's like they came out of the womb doing that.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it with every time. Watch them. If they're showing any of those signs to you, if they're looking more sleepy, if they're acting weird, if they're complaining of any symptoms, that's when you need to take it a step back. I'd say get them evaluated, but to be honest, the medical world doesn't really evaluate mild traumatic brain injuries or concussions very well. Yeah. They'll just say, hey, take it easy for a little bit. So as a parent, you really need to advocate for your children. Pay attention to what they're doing. Know your kids inside and out, so that when something like this happens, you know, and you're the first person to know. Yeah. My oldest son played, well, he was a skateboarder first, and that scared me more than when he played football. But I allowed him to play football, and my neurology counterparts would ask me all the time, why do you let your kid play football if you know that it's a risk? And I said, do you remember what I do? I know even more than the most parents what to watch for. Even if he's not telling me his symptoms, I will be able to see it. And that's where you should be as a parent. You should know your kids well enough that if they're acting funny, you can catch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that's a lot of what we talk about here at Vibrant Family Education is get to know your kids, communicate with your kids. We've gone down the road of nutrition. How does nutrition impact the behavior of your kids? Now we're talking about brain science. How does, bumps on the head impact your children and how they act and what they can do? How does, a good night's sleep impact what they can do and how they do? So all of those things, we're saying, please get to know your children, communicate with your children. And you don't have to be nosy, but hey, you really know when your kids are doing something weird, off, you get to know that.
If you're paying attention, you'll notice.
We kind of lost communication with our son several years ago, and it was right after he hit his head a couple of times on an outing, and his personality did start to change, but we didn't think about it, that kind of information still wasn't as prevalent even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, as it is now. But, the
16, 17, 18. So it's like, pretty much on the go, grown. So it's like, don't have to worry about it too much.
And moody teenagers, sometimes those moody teenagers are more than just regular moody.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's some of those things that will play into to confuse you a little bit as parents on whether or not something's going on. But again, if you pay attention to their moods, you'll catch when something's off with that too. When my kids, they haven't had head injuries, thank goodness. But if they're acting differently, I call them out on it. I'm like, hey, is everything going okay? Because you're acting kind of funny, and we'll talk through what happened. And you should absolutely be able to do that with your kids.
Yeah, exactly. Back to that communication piece, whether it be weekly family meetings or a daughter, dad date, dad, mom, or son, mom date, whatever, those weekly kinds of, at least monthly kinds of things where you're really going deep and checking in with your child and like, hey, what is really up?
Yeah. And if their school starts suffering, there could be lots of reasons, it could be like bullying at school. It could be other issues, but it also could be a concussive trauma. So, to be able to talk and find out what's going on instead of just, oh, moody teens, just let them go. Really, really, it's communication is so, so very important. Hey, what's going on? What kind of games are you playing? Have you hit your head? Are people picking on you? So, these are kind of questions all across the board to help you figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my middle child is a swimmer. Mm-hmm. Swimmers can get concussions too. People don't think about that, but if they misjudge where the wall is, they can hit the wall instead of getting their arm up there in time to catch themselves. So it can happen in any sport, really.
Yeah,
I've done that a couple of times. It's mm-hmm. like you get so into the stroke and you forget, you stop looking, you stop paying attention. All of a sudden, it's like quack quack. It's
So gotta be careful in all the sports, honestly, whether they're contact or not. You might not think about that, those non-contact sports, but they can still end up with concussions there too.
Exactly. So. All right. So let's say the worst has happened and our kiddo does have an injury. What can parents do the best, the most to help them either recover or figure out how things are going to be different now? What's kind of the next steps in case that has happened?
Yeah. If they are playing a sport, communicating with that coach is going to be huge. So making sure that you are on the same page as the coach and they know the timeline of getting back. They might need a couple days before they get back to school activities. So give them that rest time. The biggest time that our brain heals is when we're resting. So rest is very important. That's why we always stress that. And that's why for the longest time we told people to really lay low after an accident. Yeah. But as soon as they can physically do something, they need take them for walks, go for walks with them so you can keep an eye on them, but keep it light activity, but don't let them just hang out on their bed in the dark because that'll actually slow down their healing process. Okay. Get them in to get evaluated. Mm-hmm. Might not be the most stellar evaluation, but some kind of evaluation is better than nothing. And at least it's documented that they had an injury. Mm-hmm. So if something does come up down the road, you have that documentation to say, hey, this happened. And now we know what it might be related to. So again, watch your kids. Make sure that they're eating as healthy as they can. We talked about nutrition being important. Nutrition is really important when your brain is healing. So it's kind of like the same thing as when you have a broken bone. And we always say to increase your protein a little bit during that time. Mm-hmm. Increase the protein and the healthy fats when your brain is trying to heal. Yeah. So we always, for the so many decades now, we've been telling people to go to low-fat diets. That's not the time you want to be low-fat. I mean, you never really want to anyway. But you don't want to be low fat when your brain is trying to heal, because our brain requires fat in order to heal, in order to function appropriately. But it's healthy fat. It doesn't mean go to McDonald's. It means healthy cheeses, healthy nuts, things that will get those healthy fats into your body. And so that's the time to get that into play. Make sure that they're resting, and then just support them however you can. Be their advocate, be their friend, be their confidant, somebody that they can vent to if they're just feeling frustrated with their schooling, with their sport, whatever. Because there's going to be frustrations there, and they just need to be heard too.
Yep. And one of the things that I heard in there that I would like to mention is not all coaches are the same. So high school coaches probably have a lot more of this concussion protocol information because they're in the public school space and they have to know that. But so many of our kids now have parent coaches. So it's like, especially like the Pee Wee leagues and the small kids leagues, it's like, oh, which parent is going to be coaching? And they might not get all of this concussion protocol information. Or if they do, they're busy. That's not coaching isn't their main thing.
Their
So they
main
might
thing.
not pay. So you are your children's best
Advocate.
advocate. Even if the coach does know that stuff, you still are your kid's best advocate. And if they do hurt themselves, you need to do the research. You need to find the information and you need to take charge of that. So don't just rely on the coach. Don't rely on they should know it, because if they should know it, then that should kid end up all over you. And so really, you need to take charge and be your child's advocate.
Yeah. And along that same lines of not all coaches are equal, not all sports are equal either. There is still a lot of research to say that men's sports still put more emphasis on the kids to get back into the sport probably before they should, because of just that, this is your sport. You got to tough it up, be a man, be a whatever. Whereas the girls' sports, those coaches tend to be more cautious. And the girls themselves tend to worry more about how that might impact their future and how it might impact them getting back to school than boys do. And boys are like, oh, I'm just going to tough it out, whatever. So the coaches are going to be a little bit different there too.
Yeah, as a boy, I can like totally back that up. First time I went snowboarding, I came home with a concussion and whiplash. And before I went snowboarding again, I bought all my new gear, because I rented it the first time, but I bought all my gear because I had so much fun. And I didn't just fall one time on that hill. So I came home with a concussion and whiplash. I fell down multiple times. And so the snowboarding, when I got into that, is where I really started doing the most damage to myself. So I talk about how before I left California, I can name at least four times. Before I got out of high school, I could probably name eight more. But in the years that I did snowboarding, it's like it was almost a constant thing. And so, even. And it was like, oh, wow, that hurt. Oh, well, let's get up and get going. It's like,
There's a reason that insurance costs more for boys than it does for girls, because boys tend to be more reckless. So, and that shows in the same kind of activities after a concussion happens. So,
But we love them and we want
we
them to
do.
be adventurous and do all that kind of stuff, but maybe just slow down a little bit when it hurts.
Right. Just be a little bit more cautious. I will say that kids tend to be a little bit more made of rubber when they're smaller. It is true, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. So once they start growing and getting taller, that ground is farther away. So if they fall, they're going to get more injured as a 20-year-old than they would be at a, as a 2-year-old.
So
Absolutely.
I think one of the things that I noticed most in retrospect was a loss of balance. So once I did start hurting myself, I did start falling more.
Interesting.
So being not stiffening up and not having the rotational control, especially of the lower body. So like my leg, I started losing my legs easier. So for me, looking back at it, it's like that was one of my big signs. But again, I didn't know that at the time. So that I would say, if your kids start losing their ability to balance easily when they're doing stuff, really, really pay attention to that one, because that one was for me something that I noticed, but I didn't relate it to what was going on with my brain. Because every time I hurt my head, I also hurt lots of other parts of my body. So it's like my back, my shoulder, I would be smacked in football and it would be like, oh here, and it's like this doesn't come into play because everything
Else
else
was hurting.
hurts. Your brain doesn't actually have any pain receptors except for the skin on the outside of your skull. So if you're hurting in there, there's no way to tell. But my body was hurting a lot, so that's what we focused on.
I actually had a similar experience with mine. I had really bad balance. I didn't recognize it right away. I had such a bad headache that I couldn't focus on anything else. It wasn't really until the headache started clearing that I noticed that my memory was as bad as it was. My concentration was as bad as it was. My balance was as bad as it was because I didn't recognize it. All I was focused on was that pain. So sometimes you can't notice it because of pain. Sometimes you can't notice it because of just the brain injury itself. You don't know that you have issues. So,
So,
yeah.
you were very much into like migraine and you even wrote a book on it. Does migraine come into brain damage? Do people with brain damage have more migraines? Is there a connection inside of that?
People that have a history of migraines actually have more chance of taking longer to recover from a brain injury than they would otherwise. The brain injuries can cause headaches. Sometimes they have migraineous features, but it's not a true migraine per se. It's I actually did an episode about this too. Post-concussive headache is very different from a migraine, and it feels a little bit different. It's hard to describe sometimes, and that can be very debilitating to the point where people can't get up very well. But the concussions and traumatic brain injuries can have sensitivity to light and sound. So that can confuse people sometimes, and they start to think that it's more of a migraine. When you have those sensitivities because of the head injury and you also have a headache, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a migraine, but it can look like it to some people. So then they try to treat it like a migraine, and it may or may not respond to the migraine treatments because it's not a true migraine. It's this post-concussive headache. But if you don't get a handle on that right away, that can become a chronic issue for people. So,
Here's something,
yeah.
another interesting
Wow.
point is I actually have migraines once in a while, but my migraines don't hurt. So I don't have headaches when I have migraines. What I notice is I get like these zebra stripes that start going around the outside of my vision, and sometimes my vision gets really small and I have bright flashy things around. And again,
Sunlight
it
sensitivity,
and
right?
it's again, it's like a
Yeah.
zebra stripes, but they're black
Okay.
and yellow, and it's like a constant border that's like going around. And
Okay.
I found them very interesting, but it did make my life very difficult when that was going on because I didn't see as well and my concentration would go away, but it didn't hurt. And so I would have those for quite a while before I realized that those were
Could
actually
be a
migraines.
form of migraine. Yeah.
So
Yeah.
not all
So we call that a
migraines are actually
complicated
painful.
migraine because it's not the typical. It doesn't follow the textbook diagnosis of migraine, but migraine in itself is just a vasospasm, essentially. So that's what's happening. And because, like you mentioned, there's no pain receptors inside the brain, it's more when it gets to the nerves and everything else that it's causing the pain. So if that migraine stays around your eye, which we can call it an optic migraine or a complicated migraine, then you're not going to have the pain because there's not the pain receptors right there. But you still have the other symptoms that go along with it.
Yeah. Wow. Very, very interesting. Yeah.
And
Oh my gosh. My brain is like
here's another
thinking,
interesting thing
thinking, thinking.
is children often
Oh.
don't know that their vision is impaired.
Yes.
Yeah.
So recently we had a story of a friend of ours who finally got their kids glasses, and they went to a midnight movie to watch a movie that was just coming out. And it was the first movie he watched after he got his glasses. And every time they took him to the movies, he always fell asleep during the movie. So they expected him to fall asleep during this movie. And he had his glasses on, and it was one of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And after he got his glasses, he sat there, was enthralled, watched the whole movie, didn't fall asleep. And afterwards, his parents was like, "Well, you didn't fall asleep." He's like, "Yeah, but I could
I
see
could
it."
see
And
everything.
he's like, "Well, why didn't you tell us that before?" And he's like, "I didn't know that everybody else didn't see the same thing." So another really thing to pay attention is talk to your kids about what they're seeing, about their vision, about what's happening and how they see stuff.
And even adults have that. They don't necessarily know that their symptoms are related or that they have symptoms even. And I noticed it even my experience as a provider before this, I wasn't necessarily that good at asking questions because I didn't know what questions to ask. That's why I would say that this whole experience, once I get back to being a nurse practitioner again, I will know what questions to ask because I've been there and I know that people can't always voice what's going on. So sometimes just, again, knowing that all these things can be symptoms, as the parent, try to ask your kids, well, is this a problem? Is this a problem? Even if you don't know all the symptoms, just start head to toe and say, do you notice anything different here? Do you notice anything different here? And that can help you figure it out too. You don't have to be medical related to do that.
We discussed this. After your car accident, you had other people tell you that things were different about you. Because you didn't recognize,
even though it's your field of
even
study,
though it's your field of study, you didn't recognize some of the changes that had happened in you. And so somebody else came up to you and was, I don't remember exactly what they said, but they're like, how come you're doing this? And that's when you started tracking some of these issues. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. My husband noticed it. My kids noticed it. I didn't notice it so much, but they would make little comments about things. And even my friends could notice that I just didn't sound like myself. Having as much experience as I did, you would think that I would know, but because of the injury, I wasn't able to access that knowledge. So I didn't know it was there and I didn't recognize the symptoms in myself. Once people started telling me things, then I could be like, oh yeah, yeah, I did have that. I didn't recognize it.
How long did it take you to notice?
Months. It was months.
Yeah. So actually that pops up the question for me is, what really is a brain injury? We know it's like a head bump and something's happened to our brain, but is it like all over the whole brain? Is it just where it was hit? What is a brain injury? We should have
That's
started
a really good question. That's a really good question. We don't know entirely yet. Sometimes when we do brain scans and we can see little marks on the brain, sometimes it correlates with where the injury happened and sometimes it doesn't. On my brain imaging that I've had, it doesn't show any injury. But when I did brain wave studies and looked at the actual brain activity, that's where we could see the dysfunction because it wasn't doing what it was supposed to do in the different areas. Mine was more on the sides of my head. And it makes sense because my head went side to side in the accident. So it totally makes sense. But I also had injuries to the back of my brain, which didn't really make sense other than the fact that my brain just kind of sloshed around inside of there. Sometimes you can see that, sometimes you can't. Sometimes with more severe head injuries, if people actually have bleeding into the skull, that bleeding will happen at the site of the injury. That doesn't happen other places. But the injury itself could be just about anywhere. And what's actually happening, so when I went to school, we learned it as a shearing force. So because the brain is sliding inside of the skull and you have all those sharp points, as you mentioned, you get this shearing thing that happens. But as I was reading more after my injury, when I was able to start reading again, because again, that took many months before I could do that. But when I could start reading again, I actually did a 1 hour training that took me much longer than an hour from the CDC about like what happens with a concussion. And I thought I should know this, but I don't. So I'm going to review it again. And part of what happens is when the brain is stretched to capacity, we have all these neurons, and those neurons are what carries information from one area of the brain to another. If you see pictures of it, they look like these little kind of dendrites going out into space, and they look really cool. But when they get pulled and stretched to their brink, those neurons actually break. So you break those connections in your brain. And that's where people can lose memories. They can lose understanding of what happened. They can lose abilities to do things. And through therapy, through training, you can retrain your brain to create new connections. We call it neuroplasticity, the ability to create new connections in the brain. And sometimes when those neurons have been split and broken, you have to really create like new highways around it. It's like doing road construction in your brain. You're trying to create a new highway to get to that same place.
Wow.
And it can take months to years to get some of those even back. Not everybody will get them all back.
That was
unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them don't come back.
Yeah. Right? I still don't have my reading all the way back. I can read, you know, I can read your bio. I'm really good at reading, but to sit down and read a book to try and learn something or to pick up information, at that point, it's like pulling teeth and it just starts hurting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is really difficult to do that. I'm 10 months from my accident and I still have difficulties with comprehension. I'll substitute words. Things won't make sense. I'll read a sentence and I'm like, okay, let's read that again because I didn't quite catch it. Around Christmas time, my family was sending out group text messages and somebody sent out a message that took like two screens on there and I had to read it multiple times to figure out what I was supposed to bring to Christmas. And that was just one line in it. I'm like, where am I in that? So trying to read those things, the comprehension is huge. So I can have a conversation with people and it sounds pretty much okay. And I can rely on things that I can remember and I can have notes in front of me that I can try to go off of. But other than that, it's again, if you have me read a textbook or an article or even a patient chart, which is why I'm not back to work yet, I can't tell you what I'm reading. So it's that comprehension is still a struggle. Everybody keeps telling me it'll come. It's just a time, matter of time. And
A little bit more practice.
that part I remember from when I was a provider that some people heal really quickly. So some people can heal in hours to days. Some people, it will take weeks, some months, some years. And there's a small portion of people that will never get back to normal. And the longer it goes, the less chance that you're going to get things back. That said, if you don't get, they always kind of make magic numbers of everything. The kind of the magic number of when you get therapy is within those first 6 to 9 months, that's when you have the best recovery. But if you don't start therapy for 6 to 9 months, you still have that 6 to 9 months. That time frame is still there. It's just shifted. So even a couple years after your accident, you're still going to see improvement if you do therapy and you do exercises. Yeah. So it's not, years ago, we used to say, at a year, that's what you get back. But we know now that that's not true. As long as you get therapy at some point, you will get better. The degree just changes on when you get it.
Yeah, so you were talking about how those dendrites get kind of separated and then they have to
Work
rework
around.
around it in the neuroplasticity. So if you don't get working on it right away, then and you start developing habits that aren't advantageous, then those highways start redeveloping with your bad habits. And I'm gonna say, I'm gonna that happened to me. So I had left my job. I had gone into entrepreneurship. I was working for myself. I was home a lot by myself when that happened. And when I lost a lot of my cognitive abilities, I developed some bad habits of not doing stuff. And so now trying to do stuff that I had been doing got even harder. And so one of my biggest complaints was, wow, I used to could do that. And I remember that being easy. And I know how to do it, but I can't make myself do it anymore. And so some of those things, they were that way for a couple of years. And so the neurons that wire together or fire together, wire together. And so I have to break habits that I don't know that I have, because I think I can do stuff that I can't do anymore. And then when I try and do that, some of my old habits or some of those bad habits pop in and kind. So it is kind of a mess for me. And I know that, and I'm getting better. But at the same point, it's like I completely understand what you're saying right now. So again, the earlier you can get, especially if you're kids, because kids are still building those habits. So again,
Get them fixed. Get them
continue
worked on.
building positive habits with your kids through brain injuries, and they're less destructive. But if you ignore them, then they could lose stuff that they already have put together.
The one thing that I will say about that, though, is that kids, that's where that resilience comes into play, because they can make those connections much easier than we can, because they're already making new connections at a much faster rate than adults are. We're just kind of, our brains are slower. We can make those connections, but it's not quite as quick. So that comparison I made about the 20-year-old getting more brain damage than the 2-year-old, the 80-year-old is not going to respond the same as a 20-year-old. So that 20-year-old brain still is functioning and still is growing. Our brains aren't fully developed until we're in our mid to late 20s. So it's still developing. So injury that happens at that time, you have a better chance of recovering from it and getting a more complete recovery if you address it and treat it right away than somebody who's older. Because even if you address it and treat it right away, and somebody who is an adult, their brain is done growing, we're not creating things as quickly anymore. It's going to take longer for that brain to try to heal.
Wow.
Well, that's sad
That's
for me.
sad. Maybe sad for her too. She's like, wait a second.
I know, I know.
Remember
I wish
myself.
this would have happened like 20 years ago, so my brain was
But
still
a little bit easier,
functioning.
exactly.
My last big hit was in my 40s, so it's like way past that part.
Way
So
past that.
now I'm like seriously protective of my brain, and it's like no, I don't
He
want
wants to go
to.
snowboarding again because he loved it so much, but he's like, well, no, maybe not such a great idea.
And I
Yeah.
also want to do stuff like roll jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. But it's like if someone hits my head, it's like I will blow it. I will just go
Yeah.
freaking crazy. And
Yeah.
that's like.
Yeah. So related to that, getting when we're talking about those kids and parenting and how you can protect your kids,
Yeah.
you reminded me actually of a really good thing. Watch for those other sports that could cause head injury in the next year,
Oh.
especially. So that's going to be the biggest time frame. So when we talk about sports, it's anybody that water skis, snow skis, any kind of ski sports, and even roller coasters. Depending on the severity of the roller coaster that you're on, that can shake your head around too. So you also have to be careful of those kind of activities. I've been cautious this last year not to do anything else that could potentially cause harm to my head because I don't want another injury to happen while I'm still trying to heal from this one. So the same thing with those kids, especially for that next year, that's your key time frame. Really watch for those other activities that they could be in that could cause another injury.
Awesome.
So for those really sporty kids who just have to be moving, that could be
Yeah.
challenging.
It could
Yep.
be challenging.
Yep. That was me. I was in sports every season. I had something new going on. So
Yeah. Wow. Wow. This has been so full of information. So many gold nuggets, as I like to call them. All of our families, hopefully, as they've been listening along, going, oh, that makes sense now. And oh, I need to make sure I pay attention to that. And oh, I need to pay attention to that. Mandy,
yeah.
you are such a wealth of knowledge. How can our listeners either follow you more or get a hold of you if they have a question, or what do you want them to know about that?
Yeah, I'm really on. I can't say all of the social medias anymore because there are some that I don't even know exist. But I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, Brain Wellness NP. You can find me in most of those places. On Facebook, I have my Brain Wellness, the podcast has a site, and Brain Wellness Solutions, my overall business, has a site as well. So all of my contact information is on any of those. I also have a website, brainwellnesssolutions.com. So where you can find the podcast and all the social connections right there too.
And all of that stuff will definitely be in the show notes, but we just want to say it out loud so people, if they're driving or whatever, like, oh, maybe I'll stick in there. Excellent.
Yeah.
Is there anything we didn't get to that you wanted to get to? I think this has been amazing, and I really appreciate your wealth of knowledge.
Well,
Yeah.
and real quick, I did come up with
Oh.
one kind of more question.
Okay.
So what about like high fevers and sicknesses? Can those kind of things cause
Oh.
changes in your brain that need to be like watched more carefully?
Good question. So in kids especially, if you have a temperature up above like 104, 105, it can cause seizures. It's usually a one-time thing that never happens again. So as long as you treat that fever, you bring it down to a manageable level, even if they have a seizure, they're not more likely to have more seizures moving forward. So as long as you treat it, you're okay. So the biggest thing with that is just making sure that they get treatment for that illness, whatever's causing the fever. Even if it's a viral illness, making sure that you bring down the temperature in a manageable way, either ice under the around the arm, whatever, or Tylenol, ibuprofen to bring the fever down. If it goes prolonged without treatment, that's when it can potentially cause damage. So that's the big thing with those illnesses is just the prolonged nature of it. If you're treating it and it runs its natural course, the normal short course of the illnesses that we see in kids, then you're
Day or
typically not
okay.
running into long-term issues.
Awesome.
The only last thing I wanted to add was if you have a parent that gets a head injury, that's also going to affect the kids. So keeping that in mind, the kids will watch the parent suffering and will watch them having their changes, and that can cause anxiety and stress on the kids. So even when, if your spouse has a head injury or something, or your partner, making sure that you are watching the kids from that aspect, making sure that you can see how this is affecting them. We actually started doing family meetings after my injury because we wanted to have everybody on the same page. And my husband started doing that when he realized that the kids really were being affected. It wasn't just me, because that injury affects the whole family. If it's a kid, your parents are stressed out. And if it's a parent, it causes stress on the kids too.
Thank you. Yes. That is one of the things we really push is like, please, family meetings, tell your kids what's happening. Because one thing we also know about kids is that if they don't understand what's going on or they don't know what's going on, they're making up stories in their head. Yeah. And it's almost always so much worse than what is really happening. So communicate at an age appropriate level. Let them know it's not them. It's something
mom's not acting right. It must be my fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yep. So I've been apologizing to my kids more often than I probably should, but I have a shorter fuse. So I blow up at the family more than I should. And I realize that. And after the fact, I go back and I apologize. And I've had conversations with all the kids and say, you know what, this is my injury. I'm trying to work on it. Please be patient with me. It's not you. I shouldn't have done that. I apologize.
Yes.
It goes a long way.
It does. That's the message they need. Wonderful. Thank you, Mandy, so, so much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, everyone who's listening, thank you, audience, for being here, for enjoying the show, finding those nuggets. Go find our experts. If you have more questions, they're here for you. We are here for you as Vibrant Family Education to help you with your education needs, your ideas with your children, your family development as well. So until next week, bye for now.
Bye for now.